However, Jim's lessons were never far from my mind. And even as I hunted, true to his instruction, I sought out the runts, the wounded, the outliers, culling the weak as a predator would, and by observing the laws of nature, helping the strong and vigorous to transmit their genes forward, keeping the species strong. During that same period in the 60s, when a drive for spiritual insight and specific knowledge of place drove me to seek out Native American elders and teachers, I was not surprised to discover that their stories and perspectives reinforced Jim's early lessons and understood my good fortune in having had such a mentor as a boy. In some manner, all the stories that follow are as concerned with my teachers as they are about the knowledge they bequeathed. Each became a part of my sense of self, and whatever I may be today that might be worth emulating is made of these men and women and of what I took away from them. The easy times with Morris disappeared when we returned to Englewood. Changes in me as I aged also exacerbated tensions between us. Experiences with Jim and Ellie Clancy had afforded me a safe perch outside my family, and that perspective had been helpful in clarifying differences between life inside and outside my house. This period between 5 and 8 or so years old was marked by the discovery that I was a distinct personality and definitely separate from my parents. But this knowledge also appeared to provoke and challenge my father in some way. I remember a clarifying incident vividly. I was running on my front lawn one balmy summer evening after dinner, distracting myself about some situation that had disturbed me during the course of the day, but that I had been unable to articulate. As I whirled and twirled through the odors of fresh-cut grass and blossoming flowers and danced among the winking fireflies, I remember seeing the inexpressible dynamic as images in my mind's eye and comforting myself by thinking, oh, my mind knows what I mean. It's my earliest memory of a conscious self, an awareness of awareness, coexisting with my physical body. Knowledge of this separation prompted a fascinated curiosity, and I began to move through the world with the sensation of being somehow split. One eye was looking out, probing the generally accepted public reality, and the other was gazing in, probing the mystery of my interior responses and feelings. It changed my behavior to a degree, making me spacey and distracted, preoccupied by the tension between the two. These changes appeared to affect Morris negatively. What had previously been a relationship of benign neglect, random displays of affection, toleration, advice, and occasional anger on his part, began at this time to feel more stressed and suffused with an underlying irritation, as if I were teetering dangerously away from his control, a situation he appeared to find threatening, as if I had discovered a secret refuge to which he was denied entrance. Around this time, too, I also began to observe Morris's intemperate behavior more clearly. He appeared to be throwing tantrums more often, enraged at telephone operators, at the fact that he could not find his glasses, at the dog, at my leaning back in one of his antique chairs. That chair's worth $50,000 fucking dollars, he'd snap, turning on me with physical menace. The causes of his perturbations changed from moment to moment and day to day, making life unpredictable and unnerving. And for the first time, daily life became increasingly confrontational, filled with inexplicable threats and danger. Perhaps it had always been this way, and I had simply become conscious of it.